Rob Hubert, thank you very much for taking my call.
It's always my pleasure.
Now, of course, this week was dominated by a lot of political news. Ottawa lining up its 3Ds, diplomacy, defense, and development. Let's talk about the first two, these diplomacy and defense. What do you make of the announcements by Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland and Defense Minister Harjit Sajjan in kind of the general direction of Canada's foreign policy and by extension its defense policy?
Well, the first thing I'll start off with, I've got to give the Trudeau government credit. The idea of announcing the overall foreign policy principles in the House of Commons to immediately be followed up by the release of the defense policy, I mean, this is what we often say we want to see, sort of what are the principles and then sort of what's the meat. And it's one of those rare instances that kudos to these guys for actually bringing it together. The thing that I think struck me the most listening to Freeland on her announcement in the House is just how blunt she was being in terms of identifying the international environment that Canada is now facing. I mean, normally these things, and particularly under the preceding minister, they tended to be kind of fluffy and everybody likes us and the world will be good if we only sing Kumbaya. And I think that the tone that Freeland set was a very different one. I think it was a much more realistic assessment. And the manner in which that she basically was quite blunt and quite forward, talking about the challenges that are presented to Canada by both the actions of the Trump administration in the United States and the Putin administration in Russia, I think, once again, I was very favorably impressed with the way that she was able to basically call it what I think most analysts really think is happening right now.
Although China was noticeably missing in both of the assessments.
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, given what's happening, and also there's room for North Korea too, probably. But I think that I do think that she got the balance right by focusing on the developments in both these countries as they pertain for Canadian foreign and defense policy.
How much of it do you think was kind of very clear messaging and saying, you know what, Trump basically told us that we need to spend a lot more on our military and we have to find a way of telling Canadians that. And what if we tell them that, we can no longer rely on the United States as we used to, and kind of presenting it that way?
Well, that was the paradox, wasn't it? I mean, it's quite interesting to see this government, particularly when you saw what they were promising during the election. Everybody was thinking that defense is going to be very secondary. They're going to reduce it, not do anything that maintain anything that the conservatives had done before them. So it was quite fascinating to see them make a 180-degree turn on that and really talk about possibly giving us more money into defense. And we can return to the possibly later. But what's interesting is, of course, is that Trump has, and we have to remember that Obama before him actually was very critical of Canada on this in terms of our overall defense budget. One of the paradoxes, of course, is that as long as we weren't too concerned about the Americans being off the overall focus of defense for the Western world, you know, we could basically free ride, and I think we did to a very large degree. I think that now that the realization has sunk in that, A, we don't know where Trump is going, and B, I think there's a very real reason to trust his commitment to the maintenance of Western security means we got to start doing it ourselves. So you have this paradox that on the one hand, we do have to start spending more because, quite frankly, I think Trump's made it clear we cannot rely on the Trump administration for a rational and consistent policy. That means, de facto, we end up doing what he, of course, is going to take credit for, which is increasing our defense. But we're increasing it not because he told us to do it, but because we're becoming increasingly more scared of what he's doing.
So let's talk about some of the nuts and bolts, especially in how it relates to Canada's Arctic capabilities. I did a quick search of the document, and I think I had 77 mentions of the Arctic in the defense policy review, which is quite remarkable given that, it wasn't mentioned at all in a couple of previous government documents.
No, we've seen a complete turnaround. I mean, Harper did mention it in the Canada First strategy, but if we go, and Martin mentioned it in basically, it wasn't really a defense and foreign policy, but remember they had that series of green papers that come out, or green-like papers. But preceding Martin, no, the Arctic never ever really figured in almost anything that we said in terms of our policy statements. It's very clear, and as you said, 77 mentions, but it even goes further, because I think what the document clearly shows is that the Arctic is not an afterthought. It's not a sort of a boutique subject that often we saw in the past. There's like, oh yes, we have to protect Arctic sovereignty, next subject. Whereas in this defense paper, what was quite striking was that a lot of attention had been given in terms of what we needed to do. For example, one of the things that is very clear is that there is a commitment to renew NORAD. And this is something, of course, is going to be very expensive. It's something people don't like talking about. It ends up tying up with issues pertaining to missile defense. And so politically, it's a very sensitive issue, and it's going to be a very expensive issue. But the report made it clear this has to be a priority, and it's something that I think most outside analysts agree in that context. The other part that I think was quite striking also in terms of the Arctic is that there wasn't any scaling back of some of the initiatives that Harper had brought forward. There had been some concern that on the basis of some preceding statements that the Liberals had made, that they were going to decrease the number of Arctic patrol vessels, Arctic offshore patrol vessels, the AOPs, and that instead of building the 5 to 6 that the Harper government had promised, that they were going to maybe 2 or 3. The defense paper makes it very clear it's 5 to 6, the numbers that Harper gave. The continuance of the improvement of the surveillance capability, particularly on the satellite end, was something, of course, that Harper had pushed forward and had funded, and we can see the Liberals continuing. So this continuation, even though the two parties will, of course, be very reluctant ever to say it, we're starting to see a bit of a bipartisan agreement in terms of the centrality and importance of the Arctic. And I mean, I think that that shows a certain maturity that I think, you know, is not always in all of the things that the government does.
What were some of the things that were missing in the document that you would have liked to see addressed?
Well, the one sleight of hand, and it's probably the most major one and the one that I think most critics have fastened on, is that the real increase, the real defense money, when you're talking about really getting new monies to do all this good things that they say is necessary to do, comes in after the next election. There's a little bit of an increase beforehand, and if you look closely at the numbers, you'll see that they start talking about relatively minor, major increases in the next 3 to 4 years. But where the numbers really start ramping up is in year 5. Now, of course, we're already into year 2 of the term. And so that means, basically, just as the Conservatives had done beforehand, it's a sleight of hand saying, oh, we're going to increase the budget, but we're going to do it in a 10-year period. Well, that would be fine if, of course, the term of office that they had was 10 years, but it's not. And so I think that that's a little bit dishonest. I think that, you know, I don't know what you do in that context, but you make it clear. If you're talking about budget increases, you start doing it now when you can make the decisions, not later on.
Now, of course, I was rather surprised that the Liberals committed to 88 fighter jets, not 65, as was proposed by the Conservatives. And Minister Sajjan made it, he was adamant that it was going to be 15 surface combatant shifts. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, any of the analysis in terms of, let's start with the ships first of all, any outside analysis, and of course they kept telling us how they went to outsides to get it funded and to get a good understanding, 15 is a bare minimum. I mean, when you start looking at the rising tensions that are occurring with the Russians, and as you say with the Chinese, anything less than having 15 surface patents is really almost below what we absolutely need. And so it's good to see that that's being included. Of course, we keep seeing all these reports in terms of the costs that are coming, and the costs will be there. You don't build naval ships on the cheap. And it was good to see them saying it. It's interesting to see them raise the number to 88. I mean, once again, remember, this is a government that keeps saying it's going to be open. The one thing they haven't been open is how they come to the calculation on the needs of NORAD and NATO for the number of fighters that is required. This is something that the defense minister has raised time and time again. It would be nice to see those statistics and or those figures, and it may very well be that the conservatives may have decreased because, of course, when the conservatives were dealing with the issue, the Russians had not yet really started taking the aggressive type of actions that we were seeing in the Ukraine and so forth. And so this might be a bit of a response to that. The other thing that's not entirely clear at all, and this might be a mistake on my part, I'll take full responsibility here, but when you talk about 88 aircraft, I'm not entirely certain if that's 88 new aircraft or if that's factoring the 15 or so aircraft they're talking about on the interim. So in other words, when you add the 88, is that simply the next generation fighter that we go for? Or is it the next generation plus the 15 Super Hornets, assuming that we go ahead with what is a somewhat ill-advised idea in that particular context?
Thank you very much. This is very interesting, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Let's see if we get the money. I mean, once again, the big dangers with defense policies is that every government always feels compelled to do it when it comes in. We've never seen a government actually do a second defense paper policy in the second term. It's always just something that, oh, we're new, we got to do it. And inevitably, the monies that are promised, it doesn't matter if it's conservatives or the liberals, never ever comes close to what is brought in. So, I mean, anyone who's watched this for a long time has a little bit of cynicism on that part. But, of course, the fact that it is the liberals who say we have to do more and we need combat capability, I think that that is something that is a change of what I think many people were expecting them to be saying.